Hello.
Hello.
Oh, your voice.
I'm going to have to talk in a deep, measured voice
Very
because if I use
like Daryl Taylor.
absolutely,
It's sexy.
if I use inflection, it starts to sound like this.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. The only thing that helps too is just have a bottle of water next to you, see, because you'll lose it, especially like if you're going on a paragraph without pauses.
God, I've got tea next to me right now, but we'll see what
Oh, that's probably better. I just don't
happens.
like, I bet it's warm tea too.
It's warm tea, yeah. You don't
Yeah.
like warm tea?
I love tea. Like I absolutely love it, but I don't like it warm.
Just like iced tea.
Yeah. It's
So how
bizarre.
are you this morning?
I'm doing better than you. I mean, I
I don't
still
know.
have remnants of my cough, and I will lose my voice like if I get into like this crazy laugh. Last night we were recording DC Noise. I kind of lost my voice there for a couple seconds because the cough came.
I don't know what it is with this cold, but it seems like everyone has it no matter where you live. And
Yeah.
it's a cough that doesn't go away for like months.
Yeah. Did you get it from your kids or did you get it from, yeah, you got it from your kids. Yeah. That's where a lot of people get sick.
Yeah, and they're still
Because,
coughing
yeah. Because they play with other kids and those other kids might
too.
be with a bunch of other kids and it's like contagion. It's like
Like
Batman contagion.
we have them in daycare just 2 days a week, but the week that we put them in daycare, they're like, I don't know, 4 months
Yeah.
old. We literally started getting sick like 2 weeks later.
Yeah. But I bet I'm a firm believer, and I don't know if this is just from what I've read and stuff, is that when kids get sick and stuff, they're building their immune system.
Oh, I totally think that that's right. Yeah.
So like if you don't put them into those situations and you like put them in a bubble all the time, when they do get sick, it's going to be tenfold.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
they're going to be going through all the stuff. Like if they hit, have to go to kindergarten or whatever, they're going to hit all the stuff that all the other kids got when they were like a year old.
Right. It's like biology. Your body compensates for stuff and it learns just like bacteria and viruses learn. That's why they have a different flu shot every year is because they learn. Well, your body learns too, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I
Learns to
agree with
cope
you.
with things, so yeah. So I don't want to go too long today 'cause I know where you're at. Like I've been there. I've tried a podcast, even when I try to do the solo ones, it's rough.
Oh my God, yeah.
Because when I do the solo ones, I like to walk around the house as I'm talking and I like to talk as fluent as I can and it just that rasp gets there.
Yeah, and it
It's like that
comes
little
fast.
itch and then the
Yes.
voice starts.
But like I said, it doesn't hurt at all.
Yeah.
It's just there. It seems to happen to me it seems like every year at least once during the winter. For the
For me,
past
it's
probably 5 or 6
twice. Yeah.
years. Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is the first year I did a flu shot, believe it or not.
Wow.
In a while. And it's because I correlated in my mind getting really sick when I took it one year. And I was like, I'm gonna avoid it. But this year I said, I'm gonna do it. And hopefully it keeps me from getting sick or around the new year, which is usually happens in January, February. All right. Let's kick this off. Welcome to Geek Brunch Retrocast with Mike and Rob Krieger. Huh?
Yeah,
I got it
perfect.
right.
Yeah, you did it. And on the other day, I don't remember which podcast it was. You referenced my name and you were corrected yourself both times. So I'm like, yeah, that's pretty
Yeah.
good.
I
Yeah.
want to do the I because the I is before the E.
I know.
It's weird. My mind wants to do that. But we're here to bring some retro to you, and we're gonna talk some comics. I didn't watch any retro movies, but I did see the ending of Revenge of the Nerds. And you know what amazed me about that, looking back on that movie, is that their college tournament, you know, where they actually competed, the different frat houses.
I've actually never seen the whole movie. I've seen parts of it.
Oh, you never seen even the sequels? Oh, wow, that's
Yeah.
incredible.
So you think I should?
Well, it's such a pop culture movie. Like, for the time, it was very popular.
Yeah.
It spawned a couple sequels. I think it's worth it.
Yeah, I
It
think I
I
probably
don't know
should.
how I don't know how it'll stand up. Like, if you don't
Since I've
already have,
never seen it,
yeah,
yeah.
since you don't have that, like, it's very 80s, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
embedded in that pop culture scene. But what I find fascinating is that the university had these frat house tournaments, and they encouraged huge amounts of alcohol. Like, they have this one where they have little tricycles, like little baby tricycles, you know, like when you're 4 years old, you're gonna ride a tricycle. And they do laps, and at the end of every lap, they have to take a big drink of beer. And I'm like, wow, the university supports that? It's just bizarre.
That's
They
funny.
have burping contests where they drink beer, and I don't know, that's weird. And it really has like a scene in there when, at the time, I didn't think about it because of where I was in life, but it's almost like a rape scene.
Oh, really?
It's not, it turns out not to be that, but one of the nerds wears like this costume into this like ride. They're like at a carnival, right? And it's like a Darth Vader costume, I think. And it's supposed to be her boyfriend, but it's a nerd.
Oh, yeah,
And
I do remember this.
he has sex with her, and she doesn't know it's not the other guy.
Yeah.
So that's weird. That could have turned ugly.
And it's, well, it is weird back in like the 80s and even in beforehand that like none of that stuff was thought of
Yeah.
as being anything more than a prank. But I mean, it's so, when you think about it nowadays, it's the same thing, but I mean, it's so serious.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I found that really odd. But I was watching that, and I like that movie just because, like, when you some movies stand up to you because you remember where you were, why you watched it, you know, who you watched it with,
Yeah.
and it makes it even more special. Even if, like, some people say it doesn't stand up, but most of the stuff stands up. And like Jaws stands up out all the time. That's a great
Oh, sure.
movie.
Absolutely.
I give Martin shit
That's
every time I can on that movie, because
a you have to cover Jaws one of these days.
I don't know if you bought White.
I did. I haven't read it yet, though. I
Oh
saw you.
my
Did you
God.
just read it today?
Please read it, and then after you read it, don't read anything that I said, but
Yeah.
read it and absorb it and tell me what you think from a horror perspective, because I thought it was good. Like, it was originally good.
I can't wait. I
Yeah.
have it already. It came last week, so I'll probably
Yeah, I'm
get with
dying
you too.
to and there's another shark book called Atoll,
I
which
got that too.
I haven't read that one yet,
It
but
hasn't come yet for me, but
okay.
I ordered it.
Yeah, there's a
I
company
really
called,
like the shark, but I don't know why, but I like those types of stories.
well, it looks so iconic when they draw the shark too. Do you know what I
Yeah.
mean? It just looks amazing.
Yeah, it's something appeals to me about that.
Yeah. So I think you're gonna enjoy that one. I like the art in that, but I can see somebody else not liking it. It's a looks like a realistic painted style, computerized style. I don't it's hard to tell.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it's rendered realistic.
Okay.
And I actually got I read a lot of horror comics, right? And I actually got scared. I
Did
mean,
you really?
there's certain things, like there's Jaws scary, and then there's open water scary. Like,
Right.
open water scary is like a very realistic terror thing, because
Yes.
you're caught. in the middle of nowhere with no place to go,
Exactly.
and you're floating. That is terrifying to me. And there was another horror movie. God, what is it called? Where they get caught up on a lift. Did you see that one? Like a snow lift?
No, I don't think I
Oh
did.
man,
Doesn't sound familiar.
that's another good one. They're going skiing and they're like the last ride out, and the guy forgets that they're up there and leaves them there.
Really?
It
You gotta
makes
find out what that's called. I'm gonna have to
it
look
oh
that
it's
up.
called Frozen, I think. Oh God, it's
Oh,
called it's Frozen.
it is Frozen because you covered it on one of the past episodes.
Yeah, it's not Frozen the cartoon, but
Right.
it's
Well,
Frozen.
Bill kept talking about the cartoon and you were getting mad at
It actually stars the actor that plays Iceman in the X-Men movies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I forget what his name is, but it's that's an that's like those horror movies are sometimes more terrifying.
Because they could really happen.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
it's not overly like over the top horror. It's like just a realistic horror.
Right.
And
You're
it's
absolutely right. Those are the
freaks
ones that freak me
it
out.
freaks my shit, man. I mean, it just does.
Like the other ones, they don't really, I enjoy horror movies, but they don't really scare me. Like, like a zombie movie or a Jason movie or something like that. They don't really scare me because, I mean, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, zombie movies never scare me, but I get anxiety during them
Oh, sure.
when they run fast for some reason.
Oh, well, yeah.
Like
I can see that.
there's that slow and then you're overcome kind of stress, but then there's the one like 28 Days Later and the Dawn of the Dead one, remake where you really don't stand a chance.
Right.
I mean, in 28 Days Later, they even seem like they get a boost of adrenaline. Like,
Yeah.
I mean, they'll run out of energy, but if you're caught in the wrong place at the wrong time, you're dead.
Yeah, they're fast.
Yeah. At least with the slow ones, you can plan a way out sometimes.
Did you read that comic book?
28 Days Later, I read the first six.
Oh, okay.
It was Boom, because I think I read it in a hardcover trade, not the omnibus that I think Martin and you were talking about. I don't remember who was talking about it,
Yeah,
but
Martin got it. I bought all the issues as they had come out.
I read the hardcover for some reason, which is weird because I don't usually get collected edition. I'm doing it now, but and I liked it a lot, and I was like, I'm gonna go back and do it. But that's the thing with collected editions. Sometimes if you don't remember, you just let it go.
Yeah. I liked it. I thought it was well done.
Yeah, I remember liking the first six or whatever was in that hardcover.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
But we're here to talk about some old retro comics, and do you want to kick it off?
Yeah, I was debating whether or not I should start or not, but probably a good idea to I can start while my voice is still there.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first one I'm gonna talk about is Batman number 220. From 1970. The story was by Frank Robbins, and the art was by Irv Novik and Dick. How do you pronounce his last name? You know him, Giordano. Is that
Giordano, yeah.
okay? So, I bought this a while ago, and I figured I'd pull it out and see what this was about. And this one was a straight up, like kind of detective story. Batman just basically solving a crime. There's no supervillains or anything like that. It actually starts with him running towards a telephone booth, and when he goes in, there's a pre-recorded message that starts playing, and basically it's a man confessing to a crime, but saying that you'll never get to use this because in 1 second, it's going to self-destruct, and so are you, and then the whole thing blows up. So that's how it starts, basically saying that the Caped Crusader has died. And then, of course, a couple pages later, it traces back to where a reporter named Marla Manning asked to see Bruce Wayne at his place of business. And she came in and started to talk to him. What it was is it turned out that she'd been doing some stories, and there was a young file clerk in the city contract bids department named Tom Clark, Tom Sloan rather, and his sister came to her after her brother Tom got killed by just turning on the ignition of his car and his car exploded. So the police, she says that the police had couldn't find any motivation for the murder, nothing to do with the underworld, nothing to do with personal enemies, et cetera, et cetera. And she's coming to Bruce just to see if there's if maybe he could give some information. Because he has some files on the bidding and so forth. So they see that Nova Demolition Company won the raising contract to get rid of some of the urban blight. And because of the fact that his car exploded, she's putting together that maybe this Nova Demolition company had something to do with it. So now she started looking into this, and she started getting some anonymous threatening phone calls to stop looking into it or else. So she talks to Bruce because he's got a confidential interview file on Tom Sloan's sister, and thought that maybe there was something in it that could help her with the case. So he says, okay, let's check the files. They check the files, and in the folder, it's totally empty, except there's a little note in it that says lay off or else. So he says, listen, Marla, just hang back. This sounds like it's more of a job for Batman. I'm gonna try to reach out to him and he'll contact you. So of course, he turns into Batman. He goes on the case. He looks up three different bidders for this urban blight raising bid, and he's trying to figure out, okay, did the winning company do it, or did one of the losing ones for some reason, or what happened? So he starts investigating, and he goes back to Tom Sloan's sister's apartment, and she's being held by somebody. He fights him, the guy runs away, and he tries to track him down, and eventually he does, and they start fighting. And oh, I'm sorry, I'm misreading this. That guy actually got away. So he decided to go to the Nova Demolition place himself to check to see if they have anything in their files. And then at that point, a man comes out and starts fighting. So it's not the person that was holding Miss Sloan. It turns out that it's Mr. Nova who's in charge of the Nova Corporation. He's like, I didn't have anything to do with it. You're breaking and entering. I want you out of here, and so on and so forth. So he does, he leaves. And he talks to Marla Manning some more, and they're trying to get some more information. And then suddenly she gets a phone call from an informant saying that he knows who killed Tom Sloan, and that if she meets him at such and such a place and gives him $5,000, then he'll give the information out. So, of course, she tells Batman, and Batman ends up going there. And what they said to do was actually go to this phone booth to meet at the phone booth. So this is where it picks up from the first page. So he runs into the phone booth, and he starts hearing this, that it was Zack Nova that killed him, and then it explodes.
He
Of
said, does he
course.
say, does he say Simon says before?
No. Zach Noble comes out to take care of Marla Manning because he wants to get rid of any loose ends because she was there with Batman. And suddenly the tape player starts playing from all over the place. He starts shooting wildly. And Batman, of course, jumps out and tackles him and knocks him out. Now, what I found was interesting was the way he explained it is that ahead of time, he put this tape player in one of those indestructible black boxes that they have in planes, right, to keep it from being destroyed. But then he also says that that in the booth itself, he hid a dummy of himself and concealed it under his cape as he crossed the square, knowing that Nova would be watching. So then he put the dummy in there and then ran away. Honestly, I don't see how that would have been possible, but that was his explanation. I mean, the dummy's a full-size person. So anyone would have seen him with a huge mannequin under his arm, but apparently he hid it under his cape. So that was about it. And then they went back to his sister and explained like who the murderer was and stuff like that. It was a very simple and straightforward issue, which I was kind of surprised that there was really no like twist or anything. In the first page, it says Zach Nova, this is Zach Nova. I killed Tom Sloan. And that's what it ended up being. The only twist, of course, is that Batman didn't die, but I think pretty much everyone would have.
Yeah. Usually those,
that he wasn't going to die.
Usually they'll play it with those twists. Like It'll show you one thing at the beginning and then it turns into just like a slightly different take.
Exactly.
So your mind thinks one thing and then it's like, oh, that's not that.
Yeah. And it didn't really do that. And that was, it was a little odd to me that it was just so straightforward, but it still was an enjoyable issue. And I know we talked a little last time about circulation, and this one had a circulation
nice
thing in it. And the total paid circulation for the last single issue that was near the filing date was 345,000 copies.
Wow.
They actually printed 600,000 copies, but I don't know what they do. It says like office use and leftovers like 254,000.
That's amazing that that much is left over.
Yeah,
what I know. I know a lot of them.
1,000 copies.
Well, I know a lot of them ended up at the garbage dump because that's where I got my comics.
Sure. So I mean, what did they do? They printed out that many copies and then ended up only selling just over half. They put some in files. They give some away, and then like probably around 200,000. What do? They just dump them?
Yeah, that's amazing. I guess when I've looked at those circulation things, I never paid attention to the overprint.
Yeah.
Like I kind of look, okay, it sold this much. I didn't really like read it. It's pretty long. Like it's a little square box, and it gives you all kinds of facts.
It's interesting to read though. Yeah. Especially
I never really spent a lot of time in there other than kind of like browsing the numbers. But not really paying attention to everything that it says. That's interesting that's a lot to overprint.
That's a huge number.
Well, maybe, I don't know. Could it be that those ones that are like in the 300,000 are already sold? I don't know.
Well, they said that they sold 345,000, but they printed 600,000.
Yeah. Well, so that means they like sold to your drugstore and all your other places
and newsstands and everything.
And then I wonder if they had like a thing where if you're a drugstore and you sold out of Batman on day one, you could call them and say, "Can you send me 40 more copies?" Yeah, kind of like they do Diamond, right?
I bet you
Diamond overprints.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because right now the way it works is the publisher puts out a print run. And they estimate how much they're gonna sell like to pre-orders, blah blah blah, and then they say, well, we'll send this much to Diamond for damages, like because there are a lot of damages, and then they'll send this much for people wanting to reorder, in their reorders, and they guess, and if they don't guess right, they'll have a lot of copies at the distribution center if they do it one direction, but if they do it the other direction, that's where your second prints and third prints and fourth prints come out.
Right.
because people are calling Diamond and saying, "Hey, I need 100 copies of this," and they're like, "Well, it's already sold out."
Yeah.
And there are a lot of damages. I can't imagine. Like, I see when they open the boxes sometimes on Wednesdays, and there are a lot of damages. I mean,
Really?
we're talking about like 25 books to 50 books a week, depending on how much you get. And they're like, and most customers, like, man, there's some that are like, if you watch Clerks and the guys examining the eggs,
Yes.
there's people, and I kid you not, they'll go into the shop and then they inspect the comic by holding it up, flat on their palm and
I've
looking
seen
at
these
the
people.
creases. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they'll
And
say, "I don't want this."
yeah. I mean, it's one thing if it's got a tear down it or something like that, but but every little tiny
Oh
thing.
my God. And I'm talking like, not, it's one, yeah, like you said, it's one thing to have a tear, but to have a little crease like on the cover where you could only see it if you slant it,
Yeah.
just the little crease,
Right.
and then put it back. I can't take it. And then they go through the whole every one of them on the shelf and see if they can find a perfect copy.
Exactly. Yep, there are a lot of them out there. I see it all
Like
the
they're
time.
like they're it's Campbell's kids.
I still have to watch his YouTube.
Yeah.
Didn't he do YouTube with his son Grade in the comics?
Three of them already.
Okay, yeah, I gotta check those out. I just haven't had time.
Yeah, they like to grade comics.
That's
And then
cool.
tell you what the prices are.
Oh,
Yeah.
that's awesome.
So I was gonna go over my least favorite, but it won't take that much time. I'll save that one for last, so I'll give your voice a break.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm gonna go over one issue. I've been going over some. Okay, so I have three books, and of the three, two of them I haven't read before. No,
Okay.
three of them I haven't read before. So, it's sometimes I pick books and that I've read before, and these are all three that I haven't read before. So this is a time I'm enjoying the hell out of it, but and I don't even actually own these issues, but I'm gonna have to buy them. I'm reading it from an Epic collection. This is Fantastic Four Epic Collection number 25, and I just finished a Thor Epic Collection from DeFalco, and I find out like I'm really digging this guy. Like I just love his storytelling techniques. There's so many plot threads, and so much in each issue that you get. And this is Tom DeFalco and Paul Ryan. And Paul Ryan, I think he just recently passed, but I could be wrong.
I thought he did, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was this year, or maybe early last or late last year. But he, man, he draws good. I like his style a lot. And Bob Harris, who's now the editor in chief at DC, was the editor in chief at Marvel at this time. And I think this was the time either after the bankruptcy or before the bankruptcy. I can't remember. It was funny because in college, I took a engineering economy or something class, I think. It was an elective because I was a double E. And I remember we had this project where we'd invest in stocks and stuff. And I had to invest a little bit into Marvel just because I was interested in it.
That's cool.
But I lost money. It wasn't a good investment at the time.
You still got to own part of the company,
Yeah, if I
though.
would have stuck with it, I might be own Marvel Films and sold it to Disney.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd be a rich man right now. But this is an arc. There was like, I don't know, eight issues where Reed was dead at the time, fighting Doctor Doom, and there was a villain called Hyperstorm who's really, really powerful, and you don't know what his motives are, but he like snatched Doom and Reed before their death, and they remained dead for like, I don't know, 50 issues. And during this time, Namor was trying to get back on the team to be with Sue because Atlantis was destroyed, and He wanted to, he thought they were soulmates. He's always thought that. And Ben was trying, still trying to find a cure. Johnny leaves to go be with Fantastic Force. And his grandfather, who's Nathaniel Richards, and Johnny leaves to go be with Franklin and his grandfather because he feels he has to protect Franklin. So he leaves the team, which leaves Lyja, who's the Skrull who was married to Johnny Storm. It's confusing as Alicia.
I think that I had been reading FF just prior to this, and then for whatever reason dropped it before these stories started.
Yeah. And that comes into play in this arc. And then you have Scott Lang, who's the Ant-Man in the movies. I guess I didn't realize how much of a prominent fixture he was in this time frame of being in the FF. Like recently he was in Matt Fraction's FF, which was weird. It was supposed to happen during Seconds when they, the Fantastic Four left, and it had like the girl that had wore the thing suit. I can't remember his name. Ant-Man.
Yeah, but she was dating Ant-Man, wasn't she?
The Torch. Yeah,
Yeah.
she was dating the Torch early on,
Oh, okay.
like in issue one. But anyway, this is a relationship issue. He's in the Fantastic Four, and his daughter is always around the Baxter Building. So that plays a part. And the other part that plays a key part in this is like 10 issues ago, Ben Grimm and them went to South America, and they found this ancient tribe and this weird futuristic machine, and they actually had statues of thing monsters. It was bizarre as hell. And they took the machine back, and Kristoff, who's like the adopted son of Doom, updated this machine, and it allows Ben to become human for a couple hours. So he'll like go into the machine, become human for a couple hours. So all this plays into this particular issue. They had this. In prior issues, they had this battle with Hyperstorm, and Doom escaped, Reed escaped, and Hyperstorm was gonna, potentially capture them again. So they're in like a prep mode where we got to be ready for this guy. And Reed is like psychologically battle scarred because he kept Reed in prison, he kept Doom in prison, and Reed never felt so helpless. So his confidence level is just like totally shattered. It's weird to see Reed like that. Like he's really like, and then this issue just builds upon it. So let's get into this issue. This issue is about relationships. It's Fantastic Four 410, and everything I just told you plays into it. So I kind of set you up for it. The Fantastic Four is reunited. Johnny comes back from Fantastic Four Force to be with Fantastic Four. Franklin Richards is kind of like an old teenager. I would say he's like 22 in this book because he got aged in Fantastic Force. And Namor's still around, which is very interesting. Like Ben is celebrating that Reed's back. Johnny is burning Thing in the ass, and they go back to being, the same family that they are. Reed is paranoid because he has to figure out a plan. This is a relationship issue. Reed sees. There's a scene in there where Namor is with Sue, and they're like in a training room, and they're fighting against each other somewhat, and he actually pins her against the floor, and they have this scene where it's like they're gonna kiss. I mean, their lips are so freaking close, and Reed's upstairs, and he's like, "What is going on? I don't know how to take this. I'm still married, but." I was gone for a long time, and she must have moved on. And he's feeling like crap and he takes off. But what he doesn't see is as their lips are getting closer and closer together, Sue blasts him with an invisible force and knocks Namor off and says, I'm a married woman. The job's already taken. You can't do this. So there's that relationship. And on top of that, Ben has, over the course of, I don't know, 10, 15 issues, he's really taken a liking to Lyja the Skrull as she's a Skrull. And he's like, well, Johnny and her broke up, so it's okay for me to make my moves. So he goes to that contraption that can turn him human, and he tries to ask Lyja out for a date, but she says, "Oh, I got plans." He doesn't really. He just says, "Are you doing anything tonight?" So she says, "Well, why?" And he goes, "Well, I just had some questions to ask." And she says, "Oh, I have plans, unfortunately." Well, what she's doing on the side is she's turning into another, because she's a shapeshifter. She's turning into another woman that is dating Johnny Storm, and Johnny Storm doesn't know she's a Skrull. So she's still in love with Johnny. Ben is falling in love with her. And then on top of it, you have little Kristoff, which is Doom's son with them, and he's in love with Ant-Man's daughter, and she actually brings one of her friends who's a boy to the Fantastic Four headquarters, and Kristoff gets extremely jealous. So it is a crazy issue, but it's highly entertaining as hell.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is. And then at the end of the issue, as Reed and Sue are finally trying to make peace with each other, Gorgon comes in from the Inhumans, and he falls to the floor, and he's like, "Black Bolt has gone mad and means to destroy us all." So yeah, the next issue we get Black Bolt, so I look forward to reading that. I am loving these epic collections.
I was just gonna say, I know you've been really enjoying these Fantastic Four issues
Oh yeah. I've been reading
lately.
like across them, but I love the format of these suckers. I love that I feel like I could jump in one of these volumes, like this is 20 something, and just go along. It's amazing.
That's really cool.
Yeah, there's a couple of things I'm addicted to, and this one and the Arkham Asylum trades.
Yeah, those look good.
Yeah.
I put a few of those on my Amazon wish list after I was asking everyone what some things I should put on there that I haven't read.
Yeah, I just f finished the Killer Croc one, and moving on to Two-Face now.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know I love Two-Face.
Yeah. The next one, I've already covered two issues of Two-Face on Gotham by Geeks, which
Yeah.
were pretty fascinating stories in themselves. I actually learned a lot. Just subtle things, not like major things, but a lot of subtle things. And the next issue is like a World's Finest issue, which is very strange. It looks very weird to be a Two-Face story. I don't even think Harvey Dent is in it.
He's not in it.
No, I think it's something else, but it has to do with like Two-Face.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It almost looks like a composite Superman story,
I
but
think I have that. Is it
very
like
weird.
sub three or something like that?
I don't remember what issue it is. I have to look it up.
Yeah, I
But
think
I'm going to read that one for Tuesday.
that's cool. Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, the next one that I have is the original X-Men number 62. And that's from, let's see here, 1969. Roy Thomas was the writer and Neil Adams was the artist.
Oh, you got me there. We were talking about that on a Gotham by on an unreleased Gotham by Geeks.
Oh, really?
We were talking about the Neil Adams issues of X-Men. Yeah.
They were really good. And I've only read a handful of them still.
I want to get them. We were actually talking about a series that everybody hated, and it's not Neil Adams. The early X-Men issues, but it's called like First X-Men. It was in like 2009 or something like that.
Yeah, I think I remember
And I want to read it just to see for myself, but
that. If it was any good.
yeah. Because it looks like one of those weird things like Odyssey, where Adams is like the controlling writer too, and is just using like Christos Gage to help him dialogue the thing.
Interesting. Yeah, I did not like Batman Odyssey at all.
It was the only issue, the only Batman series I've ever stopped.
Yeah, I stopped
But
it.
I literally have to buy issue 6 of Odyssey, because I said I can't take it anymore. But I have to. I at some point I'm going to sit down, just like I am with the current Batman story I'm not enjoying. At some point when I'm detached from it, sit down and read it again, you know?
And I know that you know, but I'm very close to completing my X-Men run.
Yeah.
Absolutely. This is the I started collecting X-Men around number 160, and bought pretty much. And then at that point, it was still at the at like the drugstores or convenience stores. So that was hit or miss getting them. But then once it got to issue 171, I was able to get every single issue all the way through. At the same time, I was able to go to a flea market where this comic book seller always had like the older issues of X-Men from when I say older, it's more still like the Claremont Byrne run
Yeah.
before I started buying. So I'm talking like the 100s all the way through up to the 160. So I managed to get those, and then slowly over time, I bought a lot of the original runs from the 60s. And at this point, the only issues that I still need to have a complete run of the original X-Men is issue number 33 and issue 79, which is one of the reprint issues. So I bought this one, number 62, not too long ago, probably a year or two ago, but I just have never read it
You,
yet.
so you have some value, because some of those issues right after Giant Size are really expensive. I mean, the Death of Thunderbird and some Count Nefaria stuff. Oh my God.
And I bought them like a good 25 to 30 years ago too. So, and it's not like I was buying all these crazy near mint books. They were all like, between fine and very fine, and fine and very fine. And I mean, they were $15, $20, stuff like that. So it was, even as a kid, it was I had a paper route when I was a kid, so even as a kid, it was affordable to me to get a few, every once in a while.
No, that's I just moused over the cover of the one you're covering, and that is so interesting, because my comic shop has this sucker displayed right over the register.
Oh, really? With
Yeah,
Kazar,
so I like see this cover every week.
Yeah. And it's a great, I mean, it's a great cover. And I've never read the book, so I'm like, well, you know what? I pulled it out this morning to read, and it was a really, really good issue. It starts out right away with Angel being attacked by a bunch of Pteranodons, and he's trying to get away from them, but eventually one gives him a glancing blow, and he just goes plummeting down, down, downward, and lands on the ground. And what we find out is that he had been rescued previously in the past two appearances. He had been basically tied up and stuff by Sauron. And Havoc and Polaris, who are not in their superhero modes at this point, but they're just Lorna and Alex are just
I've always had a
there.
soft spot for Havoc for some
Me
reason.
too.
I just love that character, and I think when I latched on to him, it was during Peter David's X Factor. Like
Oh, okay. Yep.
that's when I like realized I just like the character. Even Polaris during that time, you know, like I
Yeah.
it's so weird, because I go through these phases. And like right now, I am so into the X-Men. I'm like, and it's just bizarre. like even when they had the crossover with Hope, and then they had the they were going after the death of the teleporters, which is kind of
Oh,
similar
yeah.
to what the what's happening now with they're going after the death of the healers.
Healers, yep.
Yeah, so I mean that's where they killed Nightcrawler. I mean,
Yeah.
in that iteration, I was like really into the X-Men, and I guess what I'm seeing, like, why I love Death of X so much. It wasn't because of the I love the Inhumans, by the way, and I know you feel different, and I know
Yeah.
Daryl feels different. I've always loved the royal family, but I'm starting to really enjoy the next generation of Inhumans as well. But what I really liked about Death of X was the ending.
Yeah, me too.
I it
And you know what the thing
It
is
seemed like
that
a natural progression of, like, because early in the issues, you're like, wow, Cyclops is weird.
yes.
It's weird. It's not, like, I understand the progression of Cyclops.
Yeah.
Like, you start to see Cyclops turn into a leader around the Hope stuff, and he's making tough decisions. He even forms, like, he has X-23 and Logan go do the dirty work. Like, I mean, he's like, you gotta go do these, and that happens in like X-Force.
And Mike, that's exactly it, is that he's acting strange, but it's not so out of character that you're like, well, that can't possibly be him.
Right. That's what the magic of it is. That's why I like said, oh, that's amazing, because in your mind you're saying, well, that could kind of go like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Because of the
yeah.
buildup that we've seen in the last, 4 or 5 years, right?
Exactly.
You kind that could kind of be there, but then they splash that at you at the end, and you know in your heart that that is her. Do you know what I mean? That is her personality.
Yep.
She would do something like that, and I'm like, that just like kicked me in the balls right there. I was like, that makes this great.
It was fascinating to me because when I read the first, I read them one at a time over each. I guess they came out. They might even come out twice a month. It seemed to wrap up pretty quickly.
It was
But,
weekly. It
well, it
was,
was weekly. Okay.
yeah.
So, of course, with my, with the delays in DCBS, I read it over the course of probably more
A
like
month.
6 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, a month to
So,
6 weeks because of the holiday delay, probably.
yeah. Yeah. But after I read the first issue, I'm like, you know what? I think at this point, it's just been too long since Secret Wars. And I'm like, I don't think I even care anymore about what this story is. But then the second issue was a little bit better. And then the third issue, I really got into it. And the fourth issue, I'm like, oh my God, as an entire story, that was absolutely incredible. So now I appreciate it. Like when I
The
first was
build was amazing
yeah.
because, I mean, we've seen the Cyclops stuff happen like over years and years, and a lot of the he's a great leader. I think that he makes decisions that you might not always agree with, but their decisions in his mind will help his people. Do you know what
Yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
And I've latched on to him as a leader, and I was like, okay, this is kind of drastic on what he's doing, especially because Storm is trying to do negotiations with
I
Medusa,
know. I'm like,
and
he's being such an ass.
yeah, and I'm like, okay, that's a little weird, but then the ending, it was like kapow. And not only that, but I thought, with the exception of issue 4, that Cooter's art was amazing. Like, I remember he was doing Superman Action Comics, like in New 52, and I sort of liked his stuff, but I wasn't like, but when he drew X-Men, it just like it, I don't know, the pencil just was smoother. It just seemed very connected, and I don't know if it's whoever is inking him or whatever, if he did himself, but I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
It just resonated with me.
And I
But
know Daryl did not
I'm
like
with
that.
you. It was like a build. It was like, okay, I
Yeah.
get this, I get this. Oh, this is a little better. I'm interested. And then it
Yeah.
just built, and then splash.
They really, I think they nailed it at the end.
The only thing I didn't like about it is it seemed to happen in time-wise within the continuity of the other books, like way before the other books.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
So that was the only thing that I complained about because your mind has to shift back to a certain time.
Yeah, and it definitely was, right? I mean, I think.
Yeah, Magneto's in a different spot, yep. You know, like than what he is in Akani, and Storm is too.
Yeah.
I don't think Ileandra, who's she's totally in a different spot.
Yep.
And she's a big player in Extraordinary because almost the majority of the story focuses on Limbo.
Yeah.
So if you're not a Limbo fan, I can see a lot of people going, I don't like this. But when I was younger, I loved that Magic 4-issue mini.
Oh my God! First X-Men issue was that 160 was that story where she changed from a little girl to a teenager. That was my first introduction. I'm like, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
I loved it.
There's something about that character. Like, there's certain characters that like show up, and I don't know what it is. But I'm more forgiving. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like I can read a Thor book and Ulick shows up, and for some reason that ugly ass troll, it's just so iconic to me.
Yeah.
Like I bought a Bowen statue. I don't have a Thor Bowen, but I have a Ulick one. So yeah, that's fun stuff. But mm-hmm. Let's get on to your X-Men because I'm anxious to hear. Because I'm really anxious to get the epic collection of this volume that you're talking about here.
This is going to be a good one.
Volume 2 just arrived, but it's not quite.
Did it?
Yeah.
So basically what had happened was they rescued Angel. Angel finds out that this man's daughter was in love with Carl Lykos, who is Sauron, and went and followed him. So Angel decided that he was going to go and try to find her. And the X-Men went to go without him to search for Carl Lykos' dead body. So that's where he ended up encountering these Trinodons and fell to the earth. And Amphibious finds him, and a strange man that is covered in like machine. He's got like machines over his hands to help him move. Is Amphibious's master, and they say that Angel is dead. It's a huge, big splash page that looks absolutely beautiful. So he said, let's bring him back because, you know, even in death, he might have some secrets. Finally, then, about 7 pages in, we get into the rest of the X-Men. They're, miles away in the middle of a fight with a T-Rex. So they're fighting the T-Rex, and then suddenly, an arm scoops Cyclops off the ground and then kind of lifts him and pushes him away, and it's Kazar for hiding up in a tree. And they have a quick fight, but they quickly realize, of course, they've met each other back in X-Men number 10, but they finally call a truce, and they see that these swamp savages have captured a quote-unquote water person. Just another like caveman type person that lives in a different area of why am I blanking on where Kazar lives? The Savage Land. And they've captured him and are taking him somewhere. So Kazar jumps down and starts attacking. And the strange guy has some sort of vertigo powers that's making Kazar dizzy and collapses to the ground. And the rest of the X-Men jump down to attack, and they defeat those forces. We cut back to this very advanced technological base where this man with white hair and these contraptions over his arms are directing the his subjects to use this cryogenic field, they basically have kept a flicker of life in Angel and manages to bring him back to life. So at the same time, the guy that was defeated by the X-Men comes running in and says, the other X-Men are here. And Angel says, you say that like the X-Men were your enemies, but they're not. Not unless your setup here is on the shady side. And the Strange leader says, you don't understand. I'm engaged in vital work here. But if your fellow X-Men listen to that murdering Kazar, and Angel says, whoa, slow down a minute. You saved my life, mister, and I know it. If you can prove you're on the level, I'll help you even against the X-Men. So we see Kazar and the X-Men following one of these swamp savages to find out where exactly they're going. And they get to another part of the Savage Land where there's – it's like a bunch of swamps and stuff like that. And there's this other creature playing like pipes. And sure enough, this huge – snake comes out of there and starts attacking. Kazar makes it look like he's running away while the X-Men are fighting, but in reality, Kazar grabs the guy with the pipes and knocks him out, which pacifies the snake, and he goes back into the swamp. We then cut back to this headquarters where Angel is talking to this strange leader again, and he introduces them to now, I don't know if you remember what they're called. They're the ones that the high evolutionary, like Amphibious is one, Barbarous is another.
I don't remember.
Yeah, the Animen or something like that. I don't remember what they're called. But he introduces.
I have never liked that guy.
No, I'm not a really big fan. And throughout the whole book, I'm just assuming that this is the high evolutionary.
Yeah.
He's not being named at all. Because I don't remember what he looks like. He's not in that costume.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what he looks like without the costume.
He played a huge role in like the Quicksilver ongoing by Ostrander.
Oh, did he? I never.
Yeah, heard. And I don't know.
He's just dressed here, just in a regular like jumpsuit and stuff. So yeah. I didn't know if it was him or if it wasn't, if it's somebody else. But he sends Angel off to try to make peace with the rest of the X-Men and with Kazar to call them off from coming to his headquarters. And so as soon as Angel leaves, he says, beautiful, beautiful. The Angel will delay the others, thus giving me precious moments I need, moments that will make me master of the entire planet. And he says, the Angel has never seen me before, except in my own all-conquering colors. Perhaps it's true what they say. Perhaps clothes do make the man. And he puts his hand on his helmet, and it's Magneto. So it wasn't the high evolutionary at all. It's Magneto. And I thought that was very, very interesting because I just thought throughout the whole thing, I didn't really pay attention to the white hair.
Yeah.
It's got to be the high evolutionary because he's always dealing with this stuff. And it turned out it was Magneto. So
interesting.
Yeah,
that's a good surprise, though.
And I know that I've read number 63 years ago, but I think I'm going to have to go back and pick it back up to remember where this goes.
That's the thing is some of these stories, they're so captivating. They want you to keep going.
Yeah, they do a good job. But I loved this issue. And from what I understand, I think that towards the tail end, I believe that the Neil Adams issues started – they started to increase in terms of how many people were buying them. Mm-hmm. But by the time they really got that information, Roy Thomas had moved on to something else. I think Neil Adams moved on to, I don't know if you did Batman directly after this or or what, but
it sure looks that way because of just the time frame.
That's what I kind of thought.
69 and he was early 70s.
Early 70s. So yeah. I think that that's what happened. And so at that point, it was now too late to recreate what they were doing. And that's one of the reasons why they didn't just cancel the X-Men, but they just kept on doing reruns reprints instead. But yeah, that was a good one.
Very cool. If it's still there, I might buy it. What the hell?
You should. It was a good issue.
I love Magneto. Like,
Yeah.
I can't, I always tell myself, like, there's certain boundaries, but I tend to side on the philosophy of Magneto. I know he's like really extreme, but he usually has like a logical explanation, whereas Professor X, you'll
He,
always end up on the losing side
well, he's not
sometimes.
very, he's not being very realistic.
And that's why I've always, even lately, I know there's a lot of X-Men fans that are not happy right now. You're one of them for the
Yeah.
most part. I mean,
Yeah,
I think
I really am.
you like Uncanny, but
I
I
do.
think the rest of the stuff you're unhappy with. But I like the Scott stuff, like, because to me he's like the cross between Magneto and Xavier. Like, he sides with philosophies on both sides, but he'll do things that Xavier would never do, like form an X-Force to do the dirty work, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then keep it hidden from other people. He's almost does like Batman things, like when Batman does like OMAC or keep secret files on. But he does it for what I think are they're understandable reasons, you
Right.
know,
Yeah. Well, I
given
think
the
that
situations.
that's one of the reasons why I think Magneto is so well done in terms of a character, is
Yeah.
because he's even like older. I mean, even older Magneto, but more so once they establish the World War II thing,
Yeah.
because you can totally you might not agree exactly how he's doing something in terms of murdering people and so forth.
Yeah.
But you totally understand why he's doing
You're very sympathetic.
it.
Like, did you read that Magneto? Was it Greg Pak that did it? I can't remember what it was called.
I didn't read it, and I really should.
Oh my God, that's good. Man, I highly recommend it. It was one of those things that's like a tearjerker, you know what I mean?
Is it the most recent run of Magneto?
I'm trying to think of what the title is. I'm gonna go find it now because I have the database up.
Okay. It's like
It's not that one.
I bought some
It's
older,
not that one. It's definitely not that one.
some old minis I had bought like years and years ago, but I didn't buy like that last run though. But I think Colin Bunn was doing the last run, because he'd think he just carried over into
Maybe
Uncanny.
it doesn't even have Magneto in the title. Or maybe I'd have. Maybe it's not like Magneto something. It's like, I'm gonna have to search, like, I can't just go to the index like I normally do. I'm
Yeah.
gonna have to go to like title name and search for Magneto. But there's a lot of minis that I don't have of Magneto, that's for sure.
I bought the older ones that were probably in the
Oh,
90s.
I think it's Magneto Testament.
I
X-Men Magneto Testament.
My
Yeah. Greg Pak.
comic base is doing updates, so I can't even check it right yet.
It's X-Men Magneto Testament. It's 5 issues. Highly recommend this thing.
All right, I'm gonna
It's
have to look.
the art is amazing too, but it goes back to like 1935 to 1945. Oh man, Magneto as a kid in his family life and such. It is
That's
so
awesome.
good. So good. Yeah, some good shit, man.
I'm looking at some of the covers just online. I know I don't have these. Yeah, I don't have these.
It's one of those things like that was like a 5 out of 5 when I read it. You know, like I just got so engrossed in it.
He's a great, I mean, that's a great villain.
But I
That's
will.
somebody that you can actually see the side of, you know?
Yeah, I will admit that as much as I get into the X-Men and like as much as I read them, I'm not the biggest X-Men fan. But when I get into them, I get into them. I just like, but like when I leave them for a good period.
Yeah.
And there's certain books like I never leave, like Daredevil and Spider-Man and, you know, a couple of things. Matter of fact, I have to make some tough decisions on this new DCBS because there's no bundle now
For what?
for Marvel.
Oh, I didn't know that they were having they've had a bundle up until this point.
Yeah, they've had a bundle on
Okay.
all of them, so it was like it was kind of a hard bundle to follow though, because
Yeah.
it was like 80% of their line was in the bundle. And then all the ones of the series that were continuing but didn't have that now, they were the extra 20%. So if you were getting them, you had to really focus on what was in the bundle and what was not. So, 'cause they don't extract it. When it goes into your order form initially, it's a bundle.
Exactly.
And then when
Yeah.
they charge your credit card, it goes bloop. And
Yeah.
these are all the ones that are, all the titles that were in that bundle.
Yep. Yeah. I know. I got to be careful when I'm doing my DC ones because sometimes I'm not sure which minis are like Raven's a mini, but it's in a regular bundle, and the other ones are in their mini, the mini bundle, and it can be
Yeah,
same. Yeah.
yeah. The DCBS one's like that because it's like the DC one is like in five bundles, six
Yeah.
bundles. And then there's some that you might miss if you're not careful.
Yeah.
Like I just go bundle, 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 but what's outside the bundle? That's what I have to worry about.
That's what I worry about too, is like I don't want to accidentally miss them. I
Because
wonder if they're going to drop.
sometimes they mess up their bundles, I think.
Yeah, it
Occasionally
seems like
there's like
that.
a missing issue and then I miss it and then I have to go back and get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm like loving that Dead Man book right now. I got to make sure I'm getting it. Like Dead Man, the Forbidden Love or whatever it
I
is.
loved the first issue, but that's the only one that I've
Oh,
got.
wait
So
till you get to the second.
was good. I'm
Oh,
gonna have to reread
yeah.
the first though because I don't remember. I mean, I
And
remember
the
the
start,
broad. I.
the art is just, it is so good. Well, I mean, what it is, it's they take a book that was a horror book in the 70s, a horror romance book, and they add Dead Man to it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And they put him in a situation where he's trying to find out the death of the ghost. I don't know if you've seen Crimson Peak. Have you seen that movie?
Yep.
Yeah, it kind of has like a vibe like that.
Yeah,
Okay, just
I agree with you just based on the first issue.
yeah, I mean you it's not Crimson Peak, but if you just look at the tone of the movie and the styles of the movie, you're like, this is very similar.
Yeah.
Just throw Dead Man in Crimson Peak and
The
you got that story.
beginning of Crimson Peak was set in Buffalo.
Was it?
Yeah, before they moved it over to they moved to England. Yeah, they first started in Buffalo, but I didn't see anything that looked anything like Buffalo.
I like the idea behind that movie like a lot more than the execution.
Yeah, I
Like
agree.
I love the first part was cool, and I like the way they get to the house and the way the house looks, like how it's half made and half not, and there's like holes in the roof, like
Yes, it's just
because
tripping and
we
stuff.
the thing that's cool is they're con people. And they were rich at one time and then became dirt poor. And they're like learning to deal with that. And it's a good movie overall. It was on last night, so I was like, that reminds me of Dead Man.
Yeah.
Did you read the New Talent?
No, I have that come. I was gonna probably read it later today.
And I want to know what you think about what your favorites are. Because for me, it
Okay.
was Dead Man. Oh my God. I mean, maybe it's just because I love the character so much, but
It had a lot of stories in it, though, didn't it?
it had a lot, yeah. I was impressed though, because with an anthology, you're like, I'm gonna
Yeah.
like half of it. I'll be happy if I really enjoy half of it. I felt overall that I enjoyed all of it.
Oh, that's
I mean,
good.
there's a few stories that I didn't get. Like the Batman anthology, I didn't feel it. I like Tom King's story, even though the dog scene was like brutal for me.
Well, you know, you
But
didn't. Oh, you didn't like the annual? I loved the annual.
I did not. I
I
I
just loved
like
all these
I like
Christmas
I
stories.
like the when I look to the Christmas stories, I look for more heart. And I didn't. The first story had it, and Steve Orlando's definitely had it for me, which was the other rich guy, where they
Yeah.
introduced the new villain.
Yes.
But other than that, it was like, I don't know.
That first
I didn't
story,
hate him.
though, was
I didn't
great.
hate him. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I felt indifferent.
I liked at the end of the first story where Alfred's like, world's greatest detective indeed.
Yeah.
Just walk
that that
away.
that one, that
like,
the
are you
first
freaking
the
kidding
first
me?
story was good, like, and you can see that from an abused dog
Oh my
standpoint,
God.
you know.
Yeah, that was that's hard.
And that was the hard part for me to get through, just because that's my thing. But other than that, it was really good. But I'll get to my next one. It's Avengers Unplugged.
Oh,
And
okay.
this is
That's
issue two. This is
Oh, issue two, okay.
yeah, this is the book when Marvel said, man, I wonder if we can get people to buy cheaper comics. And what did the industry tell them? No, people
Oh.
don't want 99-cent comics. They want $3.99 comics. I think the only one that took off was Untold Tales of Spider-Man, which was by Kurt Busiek.
Yeah.
But they had a Fantastic Four Unplugged, an Avengers Unplugged, and I think there was another one. And this one really ties into the current title, but they're done in one stories. The first story, I mean, we were talking briefly about Count Nefaria, because that issue kind of launches the from Giant Size to the new X-Men. It kind of launches the X-Men into the popularity that they became.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the issue one dealt with Nefarious, who's kind of like an offshoot of Nefaria.
Oh, okay.
Count Nefaria. So in the first issue, he was going after Moonstone for revenge, and the Avengers were trying to protect her in the prison. And in this issue, it's interesting because, man, I read these issues, but I don't remember Deathcry very much. I didn't remember Deathcry was an Avenger. And she was an
Oh,
Avenger
yeah.
created by Bob Harris. And she's so 90s. She's like a Liefeld,
yes.
Wolf-like character that looks like something out of Youngblood. I mean, really looks like something out of Youngblood. And before I want to make a quick tangent, because there was a comment on our Twitters.
Sure.
John Sid listens to this show. And I think me and you talked about Liefeld last episode.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and one of the things that he just wanted to clarify, and I've heard this before, but I guess I didn't hear it, was Michael Turner from Top Cow. Liefeld was going after him, and that formed a big barrier between the creators at Image. Like, he was trying to take talent from the other shops at Image.
Ah.
And that left a bad taste in their mouth, to the point where Top Cow actually left Image for a few months. And I remember that happening.
I do too.
Because they were like not part of Image anymore. Well, they left Image because of Liefeld. And then when Liefeld left, because they kind of threw him out, he formed his own companies. So that was an interesting thing. When I heard this story, it wasn't just Michael Turner. It was other talents that they were trying to take from Wildstorm and Top Cow, you know, from the other studios. And that didn't bode well, like, if he's going to pay them to leave the books that they're already on.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And they're all on the same team. So yeah, that was a good comment. But this is a quick review anyway. So this features an unrecognizable Graviton. If you remember him, he had like a blue and white costume.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this one, he's really armored up and he's green. So you wouldn't recognize him at all. But like Deathcry is on like the monitor duty, and they get a call, and Hercules is on the team, and he's got this butt ugly costume at this time. It's just like brown pants and a muscle shirt. And Giant Man's on the team, Vision's on the team. I think Black Widow's on the team at this time, like she was in issue one, but she's not in this issue. And they go up to fight Graviton because he's essentially making like a black hole that's destroying a lot of places. And they confront him, and he's pretending to be innocent, like, I'm losing control of my powers. What's going on? So, like, Hank Pym says, well, I have an idea. We could help you if I use these Pym particles. And then they give him the Pym particles. And then he's like, ha ha ha, I can, now that I have the Pym particles, I could become this ultimate black hole and start sucking in more stuff and become more powerful. So he, like, used them. And then the Vision's able to use Pym particles in his density to contain him. And that's kind of how the issue ends. It's not like a big issue, but it's a pretty good done in one. Like, it's entertaining. It was entertaining more to see Deathcry in action just because I don't know much about her. Even though I read the issues, like, I remember the first issue of Deathcry had a like one of those chromium type covers. It was like a silver cover with Cap fighting Black Knight. I just posted it today. That's the first appearance of Deathcry. And oh, this has like a an interesting like cross the Avengers crossing and how they're all linked. That's interesting. I didn't read that part of the book.
Yeah, Graviton looks very strange on the cover.
Yeah, it's goofy. Like, if you were to give somebody a test
Like,
and
who
say,
is
name
that?
this villain,
Yeah.
I don't
No
think a lot of
contest.
people would pass
Contest.
that.
No.
Yeah. Like, what's advertised in this book at this time is very interesting. It's the Untold Tales of Spider-Man, which is what we just talked about. It's Ghost Rider 2099.
Oh, the 2099 books.
Yeah, and Fantastic Four 2099. That's one I don't remember. I remember like Ravage 2099 because that was the Stan Lee written one. Doom 2099,
Spider-Man, of course.
Spider-Man 2099, of course. Ghost Rider 29, which came later, and
Oh, and then
Punisher 2099.
X-Men was one.
Oh yeah, X-Men 2099.
Yeah.
That was the Ron Lim artwork.
I think the only one that I stuck with was Doom, actually. That was pretty good. I enjoyed that.
I stuck with all of them, I think. But the ones I remember the most are Ravage, Doom, and Spider-Man. Which one did you stick with? You said Doom?
Doom, yeah.
Oh,
It was
okay.
really good.
It's one of those dead universes that I want to finish at some point.
Yeah.
I don't even remember Fantastic Four 2099.
I don't
That's
either.
what's weird. And the other one is they have an advertisement for Ascani Sun. And that's an X-Men related book, which I wouldn't mind reading. It's a Cable limited series by
I don't
Scott
remember
Liddell, Red Hood and the Outlaws, and
that.
Gene Haw's good.
Scott Lobdell, I don't think really writes Red Hood on the Outlaws, though. I think we've established
I
that.
think he does.
I know, I'm just kidding.
Daryl's convinced he's not.
Yeah, he's convinced me too. It's so good, though.
It's and then the Soy on art, really good. That
Yeah.
Dexter Soy can draw.
Yeah, very good.
And it's one of those ones that you're not sure about just because it's bizarre. Like, who would think Bizarro and Artemis?
No.
Even in their wildest dreams, I'd never think of those teaming up with Red Hood.
No. I thought I'm going all in. I'm gonna get all these, but I'm sure it's gonna get canceled or it's gonna if they stop doing the bundle, I'll drop it. But it's amazing. It's such a good book.
Yeah, he writes a good Bizarro
Yeah.
because it's the Bizarro I like to read where he's not a villain, he's not a hero, he's just like an innocent creature
Yep.
that needs to be pointed in a direction.
Exactly. Yeah, it's really good.
I feel sympathetic for him. It's like Frankenstein's monster. Like, you watch
Yes.
the the old Frankenstein movie in black and white.
Oh, for sure.
And he's a very sympathetic character. Of the
Yeah, me too.
Marvel monsters, you feel bad for him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just simple innocence. It's an innocence about it, and that's what Bizarro is. There's innocence involved. Just like Mice and Men, that one of my favorite books by John Steinbeck, Lenny or whatever his name is. Like, when he does something wrong, he doesn't know it. It's not really wrong.
Right.
Very sympathetic towards those types of characters.
I
All right, so what do you got next?
have my last one that I have is I've been reading the book one of The Flash by Geoff Johns.
Oh, nice.
So this is the one out of the three that I've read before, because I started buying I started collecting Flash before Crisis, so I probably bought the last 25 to 30 issues of Barry's Flash.
Yeah, the Big Sur stuff, the
Yeah,
Trial of the Flash.
sir, absolutely.
Fantastic
Yeah,
storyline.
yeah. And I loved it. It was that's basically when I started going to a comic book shop, you know, that I could get these regularly. And then after Crisis, I started buying Wally West Flash with number one, and you know, I went all the way through. So this is the second time reading these only, and they're just awesome. And so what I'm going to cover today is the last story in the book one, which is the Flash Iron Heights special. You must have read this before, right?
Yeah, that introduced a lot of like Girder and all those villains, right?
Yeah. And I mean, this is basically, I don't want to say it because it's not a copy of like Arkham by any means, but it definitely is like a parallel to a place where all of the Flash villains go, like when they get caught. And so it first introduces
Can I
this.
ask you a prison question real quick?
Sure.
You'll know where I'm going with this, but maybe a lot of
Yes, I
listeners
think I
won't.
already know what you're going to ask.
Okay. You have somebody that murdered 270 some people, and that person is violent.
Yeah.
Are you gonna move that person from a prison into a facility for the criminally insane?
Not if they're not criminally insane.
Exactly.
Catwoman has no business being in Arkham Asylum. She's not insane. She
No, I just wanted
it's
to
not a
ask you a
prison.
prison because I'm not a lawyer, but in my mind, you're under solitary confinement in a maximum security state prison for murdering 200. You're not going to be saying, "Oh, we're going to put you in an insane asylum because you're violent."
No.
You'll be under 24-hour watch in a maximum security prison.
Well, because Arkham Asylum is not a prison.
It's not.
No.
You have to be mentally insane.
Exactly.
And I'm sorry to go off on that tangent.
No,
We
you're
started
fine.
talking
Yes.
about Iron Heights and
Yeah.
Blackgate. They're two of the biggest prisons in the DCU. And the other one's the Suicide Squad one,
Great.
Bell Reve.
Yeah. But I agree with you, and you know, not to get off on the tangents, but it's interesting to discuss. But I've always thought, like, when you think of the major Batman villains, there's the majority of them are insane to some extent, most of them to a very large extent. But I always thought that out of all of his main villains, that Catwoman obviously is not insane, and I don't believe the
Penguin's
Penguin
another
is.
one. Penguin
Yes,
will not be insane.
those are the only two like premier A-list Batman villains that I consider as not insane at all.
I
It's
agree with you 110%.
Penguin is it has his eccentricities where his, you know, with his bird motif and stuff, but he's not insane.
Yeah,
He does everything
he
very
knows
smartly.
it's he's very logical.
He's very, yes,
He's
yeah.
like a Lex Luthor, but a little not as smart.
Yeah, more, yeah, he's more
But he is
mob
more of a
level Lex.
gangster, like
Yeah,
he than
gangster.
Lex Luthor.
Yes.
So he's more of the underworld than Lex Luthor's of the underworld.
Absolutely. So those two characters never belong in Arkham. They would belong in an actual prison if they were caught.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, me and you are on the same page.
We have a lot of tangents this episode.
But you know what the thing is that I don't have that. I mean, I like Catwoman just fine, but I don't have that really, really strong connection, love.
It's of, not like people place that Catwoman thing with me.
But I thought you do because you have.
I am upset with the Catwoman thing, but I'm more upset with the way he tells the story.
Okay.
I have a big problem when you show me a scene and then show narrative of something else.
Yeah, see, that doesn't bother me.
It takes me out of the fucking story. It really does. It totally does. And that is just one of you know, we all have our pet peeves, right? Sure. I mean, we all have. And if you're reading along and I'm like, okay, this is blah. Well, I don't want to get into that. I'm talking with Daryl later today, and we'll be talking a lot about that. But I did want to point out, and it was related because you're talking about Iron Heights, and we're talking about mentally insane versus somebody that is sane and is a criminal.
Knows exactly what they're doing and knows right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And even the way it's written, she knew exactly what she was doing. If even,
she did it for a very logical reason.
Right. You mess with my mm-hmm. orphanage, you know, where I grew up and they took care of me, I'll mess with you.
She didn't do anything. She did it, assuming that she really did that, she did something illegal, but she didn't do anything that makes her insane.
Exactly.
It totally makes sense from a criminal point of view why she decided to do that. That doesn't, so then she, therefore she doesn't belong in Arkham. And I think you pointed out too, what was she getting the death penalty or is she not getting, I don't remember if she's getting.
Yeah. I'd have to go and reread, but I'm pretty sure they mentioned the death penalty.
So
obviously, if you're on on death row,
yeah,
you will not go to the criminally insane because if you're either ruled insane and you're going to live and be locked up the rest of your life.
Yep.
Or they're going to put you to death.
Exactly. They don't put insane people to death because you're basically saying they.
Yeah, you're not.
They don't,
you're right.
Have control of their actions 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, on the same page.
All right. So let's.
That was a good tangent.
Yeah, we'll go back into Iron Heights. We're going to go back into Girder.
So we're going into Iron Heights. It was like I said, first time rereading this since it came out. Absolutely fantastic story. I couldn't recommend it more. It's also nice that even if you aren't reading this in context of the rest of like this particular trade, if you just wanted to pick this one story up, you could pick it up and it tells a complete story. So I highly recommend if somebody hasn't read this and is interested in reading The Flash to read this story. Absolutely incredible. It starts with a flashback of 9 years prior with officer, is it Shire or Shire? Do you remember him?
The older cop. he was a huge cop in his run. Jeff
yeah. How do you pronounce that?
I could never pronounce it. Shire?
Yeah, I have no idea. I'll just say Shire.
I just remember Scott Collins drew his face really weird.
Yeah.
Like he's like aged and rugged.
Yes, very rugged.
Very rugged.
So this is 9 years ago, and they're responding. Him and his partner are responding to a call that this doctor was seen fleeing on foot, and so on and so forth. And you know, he says, "Hold on, Joe. I hear something," and like murmuring. And then you hear this. You see this creepy ass guy, long arms and legs, like messed up teeth and stuff. He's killed. You see these dead bodies on the floor. There's like at least two women that have been killed. And he's going after this third. He keeps telling her to be quiet and to stop talking. And the police bust in and they end up, and he's telling them to shut up and stuff, and they end up shooting him. And it turns out he's still alive. Then it flashes. It's still a flashback, but it goes to the actual court, the actual proceedings when they're arraigning this doctor. It's called Dr. Amar. And Barry is, as the forensic scientist, is giving evidence that shows, that he was guilty of at least 12 of 50 murders that they suspect that he had something to do with. They have solid evidence on at least 12 of them. So he goes on to say that they weren't able to identify his blood at the crime scenes because it responded very strangely to their tests. However, they were able to identify some fibers from Dr. Amar's clothing, and also some bite marks matched his dental records. So he was biting his victims as well. Basically, he gets death by lethal injection, and Barry even says, "Hope you rot, doctor." Then it flashes forward to today. And Wally and Jay are saving a train. They end up getting some help from the Pied Piper, who at this point in history is now a hero. And he works on occasion with Wally West. So at this point, the previous regular issues, Weather Wizard has just been captured. And so it's showing now Iron Heights, Weather Wizard, along with some other inmates being put into Iron Heights. They separate Weather Wizard from the rest of the criminals, from the rest of the inmates, and said, you know, you're going somewhere else. You're going down to the pipeline. And the warden of the establishment is named Gregory Wolfe. And he comes to start talking to the weather wizard and says, you know, you're going to be here. You're going to be in this this particular part of Iron Heights called the pipeline. And he starts grilling him basically and asking him questions and accusing him of killing his brother. And weather wizard is saying, no, he had a heart attack. And he's like, I read that in your transcript. They couldn't prove anything. How did you kill him? And so on and so forth. Then he starts denying it some more, and suddenly he starts like seizing up, like his muscles start tensing up and causing him pain. And you see that the warden's eyes actually turn red. So it's very obvious that something's going on with this warden, but it doesn't go any farther than that. He said, the prison is not a revolving door. It's not here for your benefit. There's no rehabilitation program. There's no therapists here. We don't care. You chose this path. You're placed on the pipeline with the other masks, the other supervillains. You will wear this ridiculous costume for one reason only. The guards ever see a mask outside of their cell, no matter where that prisoner may be, they will shoot to kill. And then he said, I hope I made myself clear, but in case I haven't, he brings in about four or five police and riot outfits with like metal batons and shields. And it's obvious they're going to beat the crap out of the weather wizard. So they throw him in a cell, and then you see that one of the guards is coughing a little. He was doing another one was coughing as they were arranging, like getting the weather wizard into the pipeline. Now the second one starts coughing. He's like, "Oh, I hope I'm not catching your cold." And then he starts really coughing and flumps down onto the ground. There's blood coming out of his mouth, and you actually see that they've collapsed right outside of another cell where. It says Dr. Amar crossed out, and it says somebody carved murmur onto the door instead. And you see this mask, like, looking at these two dead guards.
Murmur so this actually made his way to the TV, too.
Yeah. So this is Murmur's first appearance.
Yeah.
And so then at this point, you're seeing Wally and Linda and the Pied Piper. They're watching hockey on TV. He gets a call, Wally gets a call from Iron Heights saying that something's happened and it's on lockdown mode and that there's before everything basically went out, guards and prisoners were complaining of sore throats, dry mouths. They were going to be rushed to the hospital, but then communication was cut out and nobody can get in or out. There's been about a dozen dead guards outside of the prison, and they all seem to have some sort of respiratory virus they were killed from. So they're asking Wally to him and Jay and Pied Piper to go. So they put masks on to cover their faces, and that's what they do. Pied Piper ended up the warden had been talking to them about that the place was escape proof, although one person in the past had escaped, and it turns out the pipe puffer was that one person. So he actually knows a secret way in, and they get in through that way. It comes up through the power facility of the place, and they see that a prisoner named Neil Borman, whose codename is Fallout, is basically running the prison. They've hooked him up to generate power for the prison. He's like all emaciated, and you know he's in obvious pain, but he's running this. He's actually powering the prison, and he starts banging on this glass when they see him, and you can
just,
see
from the just inside. To relate that to something in the rebirth, they were using the atomic skull to do the prison. In Action Comics, right?
Yeah.
Or Superwoman, one of those. I think it was Superwoman.
Yeah, I forgot that.
Yeah. Luther was doing it.
Yeah. So this is something very, very similar that the warden seems to be doing. So he doesn't seem to care one way or the other. As he's told Weather Wizard about these prisoners' welfare, they're just here to keep them away from anyone else. So he starts looking in on some other villains, and one of them is Dr. Alchemy, and Dr. Alchemy wants to be left alone. He sees the Weather Wizard, and Weather Wizard is basically saying, "It's like I can't stand this. This is not a place for thieves. Like you know, help me out of here," and so forth. And Wally says, "Everyone seems sick." And I said, you know, Martin or Weather Wizard isn't. This is nuts. What's going on? It's got to be some sort of virus. So they walk by Tar Pit. They walk by the Murmur is another one, and they start talking about Murmur. And Wally says, "I recognize this guy's name. He couldn't stand. He couldn't stay quiet. He hated noise. But some of these others," and Pipe Piper's like, "Amar was in cold storage when I was here, but he bit a guard's tongue out." And Wally starts putting things together, saying, you know, this virus is eating at the people's throats, choking them to death, keeping them quiet. He's like, I know it's him somehow. He did something. So turns out that as they come up to his cell, he's got some sort of strange gun. Murmur does. He pulls it out and actually from inside the cell and shoots Wally. And it cracks the glass-sealed cell of Girder. Because if Girder is exposed to air, then he starts rusting. So he was sealed in behind glass so he wouldn't rust. So he comes out and starts destroying the place. So now Wally's got to contend with him. But at the same time, I'm just fast-forwarding here. At the same time, Murmur gets away, and he's about to cut a guard's tongue out, and Wally grabs Murmur, and he starts asking him questions, and Murmur's got this full mask. He's like, you know, "Tell me what's going on. Tell me how you did this." He's like, "Spill it. You can't scare me. Say something." He rips his mask off to see that he stitched his own mouth closed.
Yeah.
Either he's done it or the warden does it. Didn't specify, honestly.
See, that there's a character that questionably could be in the insane asylum.
Yes, and I think that he probably doesn't belong in a regular prison. He probably belongs in Arkham Asylum. I mean, he's absolutely insane. But Wally goes ahead and cuts his mouth open and tells him to talk. And he starts making noise, and he's like, "Oh my God, he's cut his own tongue out as well." And
he reminds me of the Flash's Zazz.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, he's like that rogue villain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're both very lanky. I mean, more so.
Yeah.
He's more exaggerated, but yeah, I agree with that. Both just straight up serial killers that are insane. And Wally finally. Put enough stuff together that on his own that he's like, "Wait a minute, it was just the guards at first that were affected, not the prisoners." It's like they haven't been given fresh water in days. It's like, it's got to be, there's got to be something in the water. So it starts going off. And now he's like, I've got the virus. Everyone's got the virus because it's going off on everyone. In the meantime, Jay is working with Tina McGee. And they're trying to get a vaccine to this. And Wally manages to get them an actual, like, the original strain of the virus. And they try it out on Wally, and it works. And he's able to run back to the they make a ton of it with Jay and Wally make a ton of the vaccine. He's able to run to the prison and save everyone that's still alive. So Warden Wolf at the end says, despite three prisoners escaping, you kept Iron Heights alive. Thank you. And Wally's like, actually, I wanted to talk to you. There's a lot of things that need to be discussed. Something's not right here. Inmate locked up in the power room. And all of a sudden you see Wolf's eyes like start glowing. And Wally's like, oh, I've got a muscle cramp in my leg. It must be from, you know, the illness. So you know that it has something to do with the warden, which, you know, gives you more reason to keep reading. And basically that's pretty much it, except for the fact that Murmur actually is one of the prisoners that escaped. He ran away when all the water went off and Wally had to try to save everyone else. And the last page is somebody talking, saying that, you know, we got you away from this. You owe it to us to join the new Rogues Gallery. So you see that Weather Wizard is there. He's escaped. The third person that escaped is Girder. And it's got a strange woman that is not identified that's talking, that seems to be the leader. I don't remember what her name is, actually. But it's got Magenta, Girder, Mirror Master, Weather Wizard. And I don't remember this one sniper's name. It was at the beginning of this volume, too, and I can't remember what it was called. Let's see if I can find it real quick. Plunder. I don't know if you remember Plunder.
There's also a character, Double Down, right?
Double Down was in this issue too.
Yeah,
he's not shown on the back. They Pied Piper is able to defeat Double Down.
Yeah, you'll see him in the New 52 here really quick too.
Oh really?
But it was, you haven't seen him recently, but he'll show up here.
Okay. Well, this was so. I mean, I loved this issue from beginning to end. It was great to reread it.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeff Johns right into this character, like, I mean, Wally West, like, almost right away when he started writing this book.
Yeah.
It's
great. As far as TV goes, they've had a Murmur and a Girder.
Yeah, yeah, they have.
So, they've used them.
Yeah, it was really, really good. I love rereading this stuff, especially since I haven't read it. And I wasn't sure if this was qualified for a retro, and I looked, and I didn't say this, but it came out in 2001.
Yeah,
a lot.
It's a long time ago.
I thought it was maybe about 6 or 8 years ago, and it was 15 years ago. But of course, it was Jeff Johns was writing it, and even Van Sciver did the art.
Yeah, it was a good book.
Yeah, that was a good one.
And then we had Tina McGee.
Tina McGee from the
back
at the beginning of that.
Not only that, but Tina McGee existed in both Flash TV shows. That's what's incredible. And she was the same actress.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
That is cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
They brought over the original Flash and Tina McGee.
Yeah.
And the Trickster, Mark Hamill.
Yeah. I like how they're doing that.
Yeah. Matter of fact, when they were the last season, I thought they were going to do something with that to explain like the old TV show.
Yeah.
I was predicting it, and it didn't happen, but maybe for the best. But for me, I would have loved it because I love the original TV show. Bilson and DeMilo or whatever they're called.
Well, they could have made that an episode or something of like an alternate Earth.
Yeah, that's what
Nope,
I was
he's
that's
the
what I was
actual
thinking they were going
yeah
for.
yeah the actual Flash.
And
That
they
would
have the same actor.
Nope. Exactly. Why not?
Yeah.
Could do it in real time as if it's really been 20 years. You know.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a really good issue. I want to reread this as well. Matter of fact, what just came out, I mean, if you're talking trade collections, like for the Flash, I own all the original issues, but sometimes it's nice to just have the trade.
It is, and that's why
on hand.
I'm getting the Mark Waid one too to read.
Yeah, and the Mark Waid one just came this week. That's what I was gonna say.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Volume one.
Yeah, so mine.
That was
I'll
like
get mine
canceled and then restarted. You know, they read. It's finally out.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine will come next week, I'm sure.
All right, my last pick. So all these books I never read. So that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Ghost Rider -1. Okay, this is the Danny Ketch volume, which is Ghost Rider volume 2. Had a pretty good run. Danny Ketch. Did he even outlast his predecessor? I think he may have. Let me check that.
Yeah,
I think he. So the Ghost Rider volume 1, which I'm working on, I'm missing like 2 through 16, and then I'm almost complete. Volume 2 is the Danny Ketch one. He ran 93 issues, so he outlasted his predecessor.
Wow.
But what is amazing about this story is when I picked it, I didn't realize the ramifications of it. It introduces this woman, this Kale lady, whose last name's Kale. And
Veronica Kale?
Not Veronica Kale from Wonder Woman. But this woman has a curse. And what you learn is that she is the father. I'm the father. The mother. She is the mother to Johnny and Danny. And that's what's incredible. Mm. Is they retro did this to link the two characters together. And I was just fascinated with it. Because it shows her like she has a curse with Mephisto. And she abandoned her children at a young age. She abandoned Barbara and Danny, and she abandoned Johnny. And she goes back, and she's at the circus, and she's watching a younger Johnny grow up. And she's like, I wish I could just go talk to him, but I can't. And then later on, she goes and sees Danny and her sister Barbara, and she's watching them from a distance. And in issue one of Danny's issue, Barbara dies. So it shows the two twins, but they're not twins. I don't believe they're twins. They're just brother and sister. It relates that back to them. So her curse, even though she kept the curse away from Mephisto, it led back to turn both of those characters into the Ghost Rider. And it's interesting because when she turned into the Ghost Rider, she didn't look like a female Ghost Rider. She looked like a male Ghost Rider.
Oh, wow.
So it's like her body morphed into this demon who had the male physique. But it's a really fascinating story, and it's narrated by Stan Lee. That's what's so
really?
he's like your Crypt Keeper.
Yeah.
He starts the beginning and says, well, I'm going to tell you a tale that you didn't know about in the Stan Lee voice. And then at the end, he closes out the story, and it's really a cool story.
That's cool.
Yeah, it makes me want to read. I think I skipped out on Flashback Month across the titles. I know I have Daredevil Flashback for sure, but I don't have a lot of those titles. But
anything I was buying at the time I bought the Flashback, but I wasn't collecting a Ghost Rider anymore at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have that one.
So I'm close to having every single volume of Ghost Rider.
Wow.
And there's a lot of them.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. And I have the most expensive one, which is number one, and I have his Marvel Spotlight, so
That's a big one.
I can achieve the others. I'm not worried about.
Did you get Ghost Rider 1 a long time ago, or
No, it's pretty recent.
was it?
I bought Ghost Rider 1 either at Heroes Con or Baltimore. I can't remember now.
Oh, that's
Sounds
this year,
blur
right?
to me, yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that. You did mention that. Yeah,
And
that's.
also acquired Marvel Spotlight there too.
Wow, that's a good one.
Yeah. So I have all, I am missing one, like Ghost Rider had like six appearances, I believe, or five appearances in Marvel Spotlight. I am missing one Marvel Spotlight. But it's like a $30 book in mint. You know what I mean? It's not gonna
Yeah,
cost me a lot.
it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
When did it first appear? Marvel
Marvel
Spotlight what?
Spotlight 5, I believe.
Five, okay. Yeah, you're right. Oh, wow. That is an expensive one in mint condition.
Yeah.
The beta database.
And I don't know if you noticed the prices in the database, but they're pretty conservative prices.
They can be.
As
Every once in a while, I see something like this stuff.
opposed to Overstreet.
Yeah.
Typically, if you compare the price in our database, which we use Comicbase, to a price that's in Overstreet, it's less.
Yeah. I agree with you. Every once in a while, I see something that just looks odd, but a lot of times I'll send an email to them. I'm like,
Oh yeah, there's been
is that right?
mistakes.
Yeah.
Like they effed up like a Golden Age book recently. I can't remember which one it was. But it was a key Golden Age book, and I looked at it and I was like, that's cheap. That's like wrong.
You know what? There is one right now that they still didn't. I thought I sent a note a while ago, or email a while ago, but they never ended up changing. X-Men number 9, the original series, is what is it? Hang on, let me find it. It's showing in mint condition. I gotta switch it. Showing in mint condition that it's $2,625 for X-Men 9. That cannot possibly be correct.
But you know the thing, they're linked to Atomic Avenue.
Yeah.
So what that means is maybe they sold something at that
For that
price.
price.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which just that seems way
It way
out of
off, yeah.
range compared to
You
eight,
gotta be
seven.
careful. When you cost things, you have to look at three things.
Yeah.
I like to look at my database first because it's the easily accessible, right? It's right in my face all the time. I then look at Overstreet second, like what does this static cost? It's static, it's not dynamic. And then I look to eBay, which is a more dynamic. What is this going for now?
Yeah, and you see what actually sold.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. So that wraps up our books.
Yeah, that was it.
And you made
We
it,
did
and your
it.
voice
We did
sounded
it.
pretty good.
Yeah, it's all right.
It got better as
It
the
actually
time
did. I
went,
thought it was
yeah.
going, but
So you
I'm
talked
able
it
to talk,
out.
but yeah, more
Yeah.
inflection. Do we have any questions?
We had that one comment, but I'll check again to see if we have any more questions, but that was it.
Okay.
Yeah, we just had the one about the Liefeld that we covered.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I just posted it like half hour before we started, so.
Yeah.
But that's cool.
That's good.
And you can reach us at
You go ahead.
geekbrunchpodcast.com. Forum for geeks. Scroll down to Geek Brunch.
And I'm at Rob Krieger, KryGier, on Twitter.
And I'm at Mike Myers Brunch on Twitter, and we have a Facebook page, Geek Brunch Podcast. And we had one other question. It was from some guy called Rob Krieger.
Oh, there was one.
Krieger,
I
Krieger,
forgot.
God dang
Yeah,
it.
there was, yeah.
Krieger, yeah. He says something like, "When is Chris Ivey coming back? His
Yeah.
replacement is an asshole."
Well, hopefully Hopefully he'll be back.
Hopefully
soon.
Soon. He's been quiet. He's been
very quiet, yeah.
Very quiet, and I get worried, and I ping him every 5 days or so, and I say, "Are you okay, man?"
Yeah, I'm gonna. I need to. I was thinking about him the other day. I gotta send him.
He's doing okay. Everybody's okay.
That's good. That's good. Yeah.
He's just sticking to the plan and staying away from social media, which is probably pretty good because every day there's something new about you know who, and
yeah.
It really can aggravate the shit out of you.
Well, because even if it's "I told you so" folks, that still doesn't make you feel any better because it's already done. This is already a done deal at this point.
It's scary.
And what can you do about it?
We talked about shark horror. We talked about Frozen, being frozen horror.
Yeah.
And we talked, this is real
horror. This is real. This is we're living it. We're going to start living it in a month.
We're going to live it, yeah.
And that's it. There's nothing we can do about it now.
And the control is so much in the 1%.
Uh-huh.
So you can read Archer and Armstrong, 1% Special, and see what we're talking about going back to comics.
That's right. Damn it.
Yeah. I wish they would have taken off with that because the concept of it is pretty interesting. But we had the one shot.
Yeah.
I'm not caught up on A&A. Did they go back to that?
No. Well, I'm caught up until whatever the last issue was, 9, I guess.
Yeah.
But no, they haven't.
I finished the first
Armstrong's wife. Oh, they're meeting up.
I finished the first arc on A&A, but I'm behind.
It was good. I liked it.
Caught up on Savage.
I haven't read Savage yet. I saw that you liked it.
I loved it. I gave it a 5 out of 5, but I will say it's very derivative, and it's not derivative of who you think it's derivative of.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it has that one correlation to Turok, right?
Because of dinosaurs.
But there is a heavy, heavy correlation to Tarzan.
Really?
Heavy, yeah.
All right.
And I love Tarzan. I love the pulp characters, so.
Yeah.
This is just a different take on it.
Very interesting.
Beautiful, even though there's two artists on the book. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I like the debuts of the last two books, Savage and The Harbinger, Renegade.
They really hit
a home run with me.
I liked Renegade, but I didn't absolutely love it. It was good.
I liked
the first issue of Gen Zero better, actually, but
I didn't. I thought Gen Zero was very creative.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very creative take to it, but Renegade felt like putting on your slippers again, in a different in the characters that became very political.
Yeah,
it's very different style of. But I truly believe he paid tribute to what happened before. Mm-hmm. He didn't disregard it and say this is where they are at.
No, I agree with you.
Whereas Gen 13, I can never get that Gen Zero. I want to say Generation Next. Generation X.
X.
Do you know where I'm coming from? And there's going to be a Generation X pretty soon.
Yep.
I'd like to do a Valiant Versus on that.
Yeah, that
Generation X versus Generation Zero.
Yeah.
And versus the Champions versus Teen Titans or something like that. But Generation Zero was interesting because you're seeing it through the eyes of an observer that is not part of the team.
See, that's what I loved. I really, not that I didn't want to see the team, but I liked the whole development of this character and just going through everything, as she's going through it. And then you see the team right at the end.
Yeah.
I'm in store for a really good story now.
It was, the execution was well done.
Yeah. I liked it a lot.
It's an interesting way to start, and I could see it's polarizing for some people. I having understand said that, it.
I did not like issue 3, so when you get to it, I'd be interested to see what you think.
I hear a lot of people didn't like issue 3. Well, I mean,
Derek
another
Charm
podcast.
Guest does the art, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't have anything against him as an artist. I just didn't like the way they told that particular issue's story. But issue 4 was spot on for me again, so it was just kind of a one
issue. Yeah, I hear it's a little jarring. It's like it's like you're watching one of those series, Batman Brave and the Bold, and all of a sudden you have the musical maestro.
yeah, it was very...
You know, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
But I'll make sure I read it when I'm in the right mood.
Oh, well, you should read it in alphabetical order.
I'll read it when I want, maybe after Archie or something like some lighter toned or something.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
That's why I think I'm more moody on the DC side, is because I'm reading them as they come out, as opposed to when I want to absorb them.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll.
And when you read them as frequent as that, like, you'll read, like, you're a little more critical. Like, you read a Green Lanterns and you're like, okay, how did this advance it? Whereas if you read them in bulk, maybe weeks later, it doesn't seem as jarring. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because you're going right to the next one.
Yeah, or... it's like boom, 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 and it flows a little better. But when you're, yeah, like, reading them in singles and as they come out, you're like, okay, yeah, that made the X, Y, and Z progress, and I like it, or the artist shift. Like, I thought this issue of Cyborg was really good.
Me too.
Did you read the latest one?
Oh, no, I'm talking about the one before that. I really liked it, but the... You know what's funny?
Oh, the art was terrible. Yeah. Like, it went from the first part of the book was really good, and the second part was like, what the hell just happened?
I am a person who normally wouldn't even, like, care, or sometimes not even notice, but yeah, it was so jarring. And it's funny because I read, you know, obviously I'll read that whole week's worth of comics before I'll listen to your podcast with you and Daryl, because I don't want to get spoiled on anything.
Right. And the other thing,
it's funny because you said the exact same thing that I put, like, in my little blurb after I read it. Yeah. I'm like, great story, but I could not get past that. I flipped the page and it's a totally different art style.
Yeah.
It was like night and day.
I think with the next issue, you're going to be pleasantly surprised. It's Will Conrad. Very consistent. Very, very spot on. So I think you'll be happy with that.
Well,
but it's very good, I think, as a listener of podcasts, to try to not let them influence the way you feel.
Yeah. It's hard sometimes.
It is hard. But when I don't like something, I absolutely do not want somebody else to be like a hornet around my hive. Do you know what I mean? And like not like it because of me. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I want them to experience it. We're all people that have different experiences in life, and different. We've all experienced different emotions when reading comics, and we all like different styles of writing and different styles of art. And if you start to put biases in you try not to be influenced by it anyway.
Yeah.
So like when I read my weekly reads, I'm like, what is going to probably be spoiled for me first?
Yeah. You got to.
And then I'll read it first. But I also try not to read Deathstroke at night.
No.
Because it's dense and I want to absorb all of it. Like,
yeah, and you've mentioned this that before when I was talking about the alphabetical order, but honestly, if I know the next book on my stack is going to be something like Deathstroke, mm-hmm, I won't read it before bed. I'll just hold off until the next day, and I might read a back issue or something like that.
Yeah, like depending on how tired you are,
I can't read
like
that
what
if I'm
would
gonna
be
fall asleep.
what would be good is like a Donald Duck or something before bed to try to lighten the mood or something, you know? It something where you can decompress but you don't have to think a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I find like if something is really like the Young Animal line, I have to read the Young Animal line in the morning, like when my brain is fresh.
Yes.
To get the full effect. If I
Yeah.
read it when I'm sleepy, I'll be a little grouchy. I'll be like, oh man, I'd probably pass out. The comic would be like laying on my chest and I'd fall asleep with the light on.
Yeah. And you're not going to get anything out of that.
Right. And it's not a good place to be when you like read a page and you don't remember what you read.
No.
That's not a good place.
No.
I've been reading Fantastic Four, the old stuff at night, and it works for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a different style of writing.
Yeah,
All
for sure.
right. Well, thank you for joining me. And
Thank you.
I don't know if we'll do one before Christmas or what, but
Yeah, let me know.
I'll let you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably be available for a little bit, but then as we start getting into Christmas, of course, we'll all be
I
busy,
hope to
so.
do one after Christmas,
Yeah.
if you're available.
Yeah, I should
But
be.
some people take the 2 weeks off and
I'm taking off. I'm going to be on vacation that week, that last week of the year from Christmas to New Year's. But we're not going anywhere. We're just not going to be at work. So I'll actually probably have availability, but see what opens up
I'll
for
try to give you at
myself.
least a 3 or 4 day notice.
Sure.
Yep.
That sounds good to me.
All right. Well, you have a good one, and I hope you enjoy your rest of your Sunday. I hope you feel better.
Thank you very much. Yeah, you have a good day too, and hopefully both have a good day before going back to work tomorrow. And if you're watching Walking Dead tonight, then enjoy because it's the mid-season finale.
I'm enjoying it. I
Yeah,
really
me
am.
too.
I a lot of people are freaking out, but I don't
No,
get bored. It's
I think
the human. The interesting thing about The Walking Dead is not like the action or the zombies attacking. It's more of the suspense and how these characters interact
I
based
couldn't
on the
agree more.
situation. So
Absolutely.
that's how I enjoy it.
I could not agree more.
All right. Well, talk to you later.
All right, have a good night. Or a good
Bye.
day, I should say.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.